Coleman National Monument in Chicago, Illinois, with your host, Dr. Lynn Hughes.
We welcome you to Live from the Pullman National Monument, our global cast magazine format talk radio show, where we discuss all things culturally economic development, i.e. tourism, and we hold informative conversations on the arts, music, business, and people. I'm your host, Dr. Lynn Hughes, founder of the National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum, a National Park Service site in Chicago, Illinois. Good day to you, my listening audience, and we thank you for joining us. Stay with us. Today's show is brought to you by the Pullman Messenger Magazine and Hughes Peterson Publishing, partially underwritten by United Auto Workers, Local 551, and the Chicago Neighborhood Initiative. We welcome you to Live from the Pullman National Monument. As we have established a tradition of explaining or discussing the Pullman National Monument, I will do that today. There's a lot going on, progress is being made, and we're coming up on our first anniversary of being designated as Chicago's first unit of the National Park Service, the Pullman National Monument. And while we were a little hazy in the beginning, and there was confusion about who, what, when, where, and why, things are sort of being mellowed out, if you will. We have now been appointed, given our first National Park Superintendent, Kathy Snyder, who visited our show a couple of weeks ago, actually. And so now maybe we will begin to have a little, it will become more, a little more organized and smooth sailing, if you will. But anytime you deal with government, things are always a little hectic and confusing. So we are still plugging along, and our visitorship has increased tremendously. We have visitors from all over the world who come to Chicago to visit the Pullman National Monument. We're also making progress in determining or revealing or organizing so that the perception of the Pullman National Monument is a bit more clear. I think those of you who are frequent listeners detected that we were talking about there being confusion about the recognition of the Pullman National Monument, because there were so many people who identified the Pullman National Monument as just one building, which was the Pullman Clock Tower, the administration building, and that is not the case. We are a little bit different from most national monuments. We are not just the one building. We are a collection of buildings, and we are viewed or described as a thematic district. So the boundary lines for the Pullman National Monument in the city of Chicago are, as the U.S. Department of Interior designated, I believe, in 1970s when they designated the Pullman Historic District as a national landmark district. And so the National Park Service used this exact same boundaries. So the boundaries for the Pullman National Monument are 103rd Street to 115th Street, the Bishop Ford Freeway to the IC or Metra Railroad line. And those are the boundaries for the Pullman National Monument. Within the monument, there are several tourist sites or sites that tourists can visit when they come to the monument. But what's important to denote is that the Pullman National Monument has significance because of the architecture. The entire district is Queen Anne design architecture, and it's pretty much intact the way that it was when it was built in the late 1880s. Now, within the National Monument, there are things that you can actually go see. There is, of course, the Greenstone Church. There is, well, the first stop would be the National Parks Visitor Center. That's currently at 112th and Cottage Grove. And there you will encounter the park rangers with the hats, the whole full regalia to meet and greet you. And they serve at the visitor center as, I guess, a directional destination or feeder destination that will actually provide you with maps and descriptions and data that will send you or direct you to the various sites within the National Monument. Currently, within the monument, there's one restaurant. It's called the Pullman Cafe, and it's more of a sandwich shop, but quaint, intimate, very nice atmosphere. Now, there is the Greenstone Church that one can go in and see. There's something special about the organ in that church. There is the Market Hall, and it's basically you kind of walk through and see, marvel at the great architecture. Then there is the Pullman Clock Tower, and that is what is confusing for everyone. It's currently a factory building that is under construction. Part of it is under construction. And that is ultimately where the National Park Service will have their office and create the official visitor center for the Pullman National Monument. And then, of course, there is the National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum, of which I have the honor of being the founder. It is a 22-year-old cultural institution. It is currently the only museum, officially the only museum that exists now. It is a Black Labor History Museum. We happen to have the distinction of being the only one of its kind in worldwide, actually. We are considered, or what we describe ourselves as, is a boutique museum. It is a museum that specializes or has a 100% complete focus on Black labor history, with a particular emphasis on the onboard crew, the Black Railroad labor attendants, who were the onboard crew for the Pullman Company. And they were the founders of the first Black labor union in America. They were the first to have a collective bargaining agreement with a major U.S. corporation, which happened to be the Pullman Company. And that is why there was so much significance placed upon this particular component of American history. And please note that I said American history. It is not just Black history. It is a part of American history, because the contribution that these men made to not only to organize labor, but to civil rights, they contributed heavily into changing the atmosphere and the interaction between people in America, Black and white. So it's not just Black labor history. So what else is there? Let's see. We've talked about the Greenstone Church. We talked about the Visitor Center. The Pullman Historic Pullman Foundation may be the oldest entity that's in the Pullman National Monument. They have developed their niche as well, and they have something, they have an annual house tour where people who register and pay for the house tour can go throughout Pullman, where homeowners actually open their homes so that visitors have an opportunity to see the unique significance of these particular houses. And they're quite nice, quite architecturally, they're quite significant, quite attractive. And so people come from all over the country to attend and to participate in this annual house tour. And so we have lots of different things that we offer in the Pullman National Monument, things that we were doing long before President Obama designated it. We have just now been embraced by the umbrella of the National Park Service, which then gives, I guess, more significance nationally to what we have been doing for decades. And so we're all very proud of the work that we do. We're all very proud of the significance that we have attained by becoming a part of the National Park Service. And we like to think that we, all of us, do a very good job in doing what we do. We have been joined by the State of Illinois, Illinois Historic Preservation Agency, who actually owns the Pullman Clock Tower or the Pullman Administration Building. And so basically, we're all just sort of trying to find our way in how we can now set that we have a new partner, which is the National Park Service, just exactly how we will each of us be able to continue doing what we have been doing for decades. And in addition to that, maintain our own autonomy, which is going to be the trick, because each of us had already established our niche long before the National Park Service came. Case in point is the niche that the National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum created by establishing or cultivating the niche of significance that highlights Black labor history, particularly that surrounds the Pullman Porters. But the thing is that what happens that people, you know, nobody likes to do anything at length. And so everybody wants to shorten things and create a soundbite. And so now that the federal government has taken an interest in the Black labor history component, which is what we do at the National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum. Now, everybody, even those in the monument, everybody wants to tell the same story. And so that's problematic, but we're going to work it out when each of the partners, and that's what we call ourselves, partners in the National Park Service area or the National Monument, we have to figure out a way that we need to define and continue to do or represent or interpret the niche that each of us created. And so whether it be architecture, whether it be the niche that we have created with the Pullman Porters, that we refuse to separate from A. Philip Randolph, because those of you who know the history of the Pullman Porters know that were it not for A. Philip Randolph connecting with them and them unifying themselves, there would not be a discussion about the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, because it was he who organized and galvanized these men and helped them to understand, helped them to get to the recognition that they needed to have, the importance of unity, the importance of self-respect, and the importance of standing up for yourself. And so by the time they collectively conceived and absorbed that concept, it was under his leadership that the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters was born, which was America's first Black labor union, the first to win a collective bargaining agreement with a major U.S. corporation, which happened to be the Pullman Company. So you cannot separate the two. You just cannot, although people are trying. And so I hope that helps provide an explanation, if you will, for people who did not know this history. So I'm hoping that helps. Now, during the summer months, there's a tremendous increase in activity in the monument, and there are all kinds of wonderful things that happen, concerts and festivals and events of all kinds, which would interest the tourist coming to Chicago. And so we hope that, and maybe it's on BBS radio here, that we will provide some sort of calendar of events for the national and international visitors on our webpage on the radio show's webpage that will talk about or direct tourists to these wonderful sites that they can partake in and enjoy. We love having visitors to the Pullman National Monument, and the increase in visitorship is getting a little bit difficult to handle, but we're new. All of us are new at this volume, but we're getting there. We're getting there. And so we hope that we will continue to grow in our experience and expertise in handling that kind of volume. We are going to take a quick break and be right back with our first guest. Today's show is partially underwritten by United Auto Workers, Local 551, and Hughes Peterson Publishing, Chicago, Illinois. Our first guest today is Barbara Kinsey, who is CEO of Kinsey & Kinsey Communications, a public relations firm specializing in media relations and event marketing. She is a pioneer of African-American tourism. She is the creator of both The Guide to Black Chicago and Access to Chicago, the City of Chicago's first comprehensive resource and visitor's guide to Black history and culture in Chicago. She has designed and conducted historical and cultural tours in the City of Chicago and has written travel pieces for a number of national publications. Finally, she serves as marketing manager for the Illinois 2016 Great Migration Centennial Celebrations. Barbara Kinsey, welcome to our show.
Well, thank you, Lynn. Glad to be here.
Well, wonderful, wonderful. We are very pleased to have you with us today because nationwide, people are all talking about the Great Migration Centennial. And of course, because Chicago probably has the largest number of migrants or immigrants who left the South, coming north in search of a better life, then Chicago plays a prominent position in the Great Migration Centennial celebrations nationwide. And so it is appropriate that we have someone to visit us or come on and talk about the Great Migration Centennial, number one, and tourism for African Americans in particular, nationwide and the City of Chicago. So we are thrilled that we have such a knowledgeable, qualified individual who will join us today. So I would just like to say again, welcome to our show. And we're very informal here on BBS Radio, and we will just we've provided the best introduction that I think I could do, but it's nothing like tooting your own horn. So I think I would just like to step back and allow you to do your own introductions and then just tell us about who you are, what you do, and perhaps anything special that you want to talk about or promote.
Well, thank you, Lynn. I think you did a great job of introducing me. But I suppose I could add that my primary business is public relations and marketing. I've been in business now, Kinsey & Kinsey Communications, for 25 years. And our specialty is arts and entertainment. That's our primary focus. So our clients range from theaters, museums, galleries, festivals, special events, and with we're committed to publicizing and to celebrating the African American experience. So whether it's with my primary business, which is public relations and marketing, or with something that's near and dear to my heart, and that's tourism. Primarily because it affords me the opportunity, again, to toot our horn, the broader horn, not just mine, but the things that we have to offer as a community. I'm really excited about having spent the last year. Well, let me back up a second. I published the Guide to Black Chicago. It's now been, our first edition was 1996 during the Democratic Convention here in Chicago. And our goal in producing that publication was to use it as an economic development strategy, recognizing that people are interested in African-American culture, whether it's the dance or the music or the theater or arts and artisans. We knew that there was a demand and an interest in African-American culture. And so we, again, saw it as an opportunity. There was no single document that would serve as a guide to people who were visiting the city of Chicago. And so our strategy was to produce this publication, distribute it widely, and we were able to do that with support from the city. It was distributed through all of the city's tourism outlets. And it had a really profound impact. We know this because the publication carried a survey in the back in which people had an opportunity to tell us what they had experienced while they were in the city, what restaurants they had eaten at, what shops they had, what retail they had visited, what clubs they had attended, what concerts, that sort of thing. And they did it quite well. What we learned from that was that a large percentage of our visitors were international visitors. They were largely from places like Japan and France and Germany, England, and that they were adventurous enough to go into the community, experience a meal at an African-American restaurant, and buy items in African-American-owned businesses, and then tell us about it. We had a grading system of 1 to 10, and without exception, people would tell us a minimum of 10, and often they created their own grading system and would go to 12 and 15 and 20. So we know from that we have a very rich culture that is of interest to people all over the world, and that it's important to us to learn how to promote and monetize our own culture. Unfortunately, the way things work and have worked in this country is that everyone else benefits from African-American culture except for African-Americans. So, of course, when I was asked to join with the Black Metropolis National Heritage Commission in helping to set up, establish, and promote the 2016 centennial of the Great Migration, here was another opportunity to tell our story and to use it as tourism, culture as a economic development tool. So that's what I've been doing for the last year, is working closely with a group of very devoted volunteers to gather information about activities, programs that are available in the community particularly those that take on the Great Migration theme, symposia, conferences. As you know, Lynn, just last week there was a conversation, I'll call it, at the Council on Foreign Affairs, in which the conversation led to what's in the future, because that's a really important piece of this. What happens when the year is over? What does the future look like for African Americans? It's been a great way. We have a calendar in which we compile information on what's going on in the community, and of course that serves to drive traffic to these various venues and functions. But what happens next is where we are. How do we take this year's long celebration and move it into the future, where it will benefit the next generation of African Americans, where it will help to serve our communities in a way that will help to improve the condition of our communities. It's about jobs. It's about all of that. And so that's our challenge, to figure out how to take the theme of the Great Migration and bring it into the 21st century. And, I mean, we have such a strong model in what those who migrated from the South, they came here with nothing, and they created these, they built banks, they created insurance companies, they developed all kinds of institutions. So we have a model for how they did it, and even though we recognize that we're in a different time, we know that our challenge is to figure out how to take what has happened, what our history has been, and create new avenues for the next generation to have employment, self-employment, opportunities is what the bottom line is. And after all, that's what it was about, you know, in addition to running away from Jim Crow and oppression, African Americans came north looking for opportunities. So we're still on that journey. And in fact, our theme for the 2016 year is creating new opportunities, creating a new promise. I'm sorry.
I think that this is a time that is presenting tremendous opportunities for culture. It is a time that has presented tremendous opportunities for African American in particular, I will just be frank and say, because this is a time and an era where tourism is king. It is prevalent across this country and globally. And
right.
As you mentioned, that there is an international interest. There's an interest globally in the African American experience. And something I learned 20 years ago from, he was then Secretary of Commerce, Ron Brown, who said to me, I didn't understand it when he said it because I was new, peeking my head in the door of tourism. But what he said to me was that cultural economic development, and people are now just getting a glimpse of what that means, but it's under the broader umbrella of tourism. And that's what it is, cultural economic development. And you mentioned your comment about everyone's benefiting from Black culture except African Americans. And that is because we have not been educated in a way educated to the value, the opportunity, and the promise of tourism, because we have been trained psychologically to look at tourism as something for other people. And so you have a Disney World, or you have in Chicago, we have the Navy Pier, Oh, we yes. have the bean. But when you made the comment you made about it means jobs and promise. And so culturism, tourism is what I often say is the last bastion of economic opportunity for all people, not just African-Americans, but I'm speaking from my own experience, the African-American experience in particular, because it doesn't take a whole lot of money to start up a business that will service the needs and desires of tourists. Because it could be somebody, you could be somebody who makes novelties. You could be somebody who makes tourism t-shirts. That's the kind of thing that we have lost the vision that those folks who fled the South, who came north looking for the new promise, they came with an entrepreneurial spirit. And so I just kind of wanted to include that in what you were saying, because I didn't want the point to be lost.
No, I'm glad you did, because it doesn't take a whole lot. And you're absolutely right. We've been sort of trained to go to school and get a good job. You know, you go to school, you get your education, you get a good job, when that's really not our natural way of doing things. Having traveled extensively on the continent of Africa, everyone's an entrepreneur. And, you know, we just lost sight of how natural it is for us to be entrepreneurs. And you gave some great examples of that. It's also things like let's just take the Bud Billiken Parade, for example. That, to me, is a model of entrepreneurship. Not only does the parade itself represent such a vast piece of our culture, but the day brings out all kinds of entrepreneurs, whether it's the man who sells the balloons, the face painter, the person who sells food on the street. All these kinds of entrepreneurial activities happen on that one day. There's actually no reason why that couldn't be integrated into a year-long activity where people would come into the community to experience a gallery, a museum, to experience a concert, to go to a club that presents African-American music. You know, I'll name a few places. I mean, we've got Norman Bowden's Room 43, and we've got Kelly Rich's Some Like It Black, and, you know, we can go on and on. There are a number of places that are in the community that actually present African-American culture that are owned by African-Americans. A whole community of entrepreneurship can actually be built around those existing institutions. When people come to those places, they want to take back a souvenir. So how come somebody can't develop Some Like It Black mugs working in cooperation with Some Like It Black? Or Room 43, I just was at an event the other night, and something as simple as a fan, paper fan that said, "I'm a jazz fan." I thought that was clever. I'm a jazz fan. People want to take back something. So, I mean, working in conjunction with the institutions that we have, the organizations that we have, the businesses that we have, there is a way to build entrepreneurial activities around that. I know that in your instance with the Pullman Porter Museum, you have a gift shop. Is that correct?
We do.
Yeah. And your gift shop probably carries, I'm sorry, I didn't actually get a chance to get close, because when I was there, you were waiting on a number of people. I would imagine that the items that are sold are related to the Pullman Porters.
Most of them are.
So, well, my point being that in the same way that a museum, whether it's the Pullman Porter Museum or the DuSable Museum, they're going to be items that reflect the institution, as well as items that reflect the history and culture around the institution that afford, I think, offer an opportunity for entrepreneurship.
You just made an excellent point, and I was thinking about, I think it was about a month ago, we had, as our guest, a segment of our show called Around the Museum Table, and we have guests who come on the show who are affiliated with or represent museums around the country. So we had a guest from a museum in Louisiana. I think it's called River Road African American Museum. And so the woman who was the executive director, we were having a similar conversation like we're having now. And she said something about tourism offerings that we naturally produce, or we produce and don't realize that it's a tourist attraction around mm-hmm. the world. And she mentioned the example she gave was the Essence Music Festival in Atlanta.
Yeah.
It just never even clicked. And so she went on to explain how this had evolved into this huge economic engine for Atlanta. Yes. But that in point of fact, the African American communities do not benefit from that economic engine. And that just made your point about our not benefiting from our own history, heritage, and culture. And that is not to say that we're separating ourselves, but the fact of the matter is, if our culture is what's the driving force behind a particular economic engine, it's only natural and only logical that the African American community would benefit from that experience. That's the whole point.
Yeah, absolutely. And so our challenge, Lynn, is to figure out what that looks like and how do we make it happen. As one of my other hats is as a travel writer for several national publications. And as a travel writer, I've gone to many destinations, and it particularly strikes me the way the Caribbean handles tourism. All of the, let's just take Jamaica or any one of those countries. They first of all, they have a well-trained service staff. They're in the restaurants, in the gift shops, everywhere you go, the people are so well-trained. They make you feel very welcome as though you're a special guest in their country. And then whether you're buying on the beach, which is also a part of tourism, people are making things and selling them on the beach. We got plenty of beaches here in Chicago. You don't have to go to the gift shop. Maybe you want something that's a little more authentic. You also have marketplaces in most of these countries where you can go and get natural handmade items. We have that too in, for example, the African Festival of the Arts or the Festival of Life or the Ghana Fest. We have a number of festivals in which, you know, they're not necessarily talked about, though, in terms of tourism. But all of these festivals, in the same way that the Essence Festival or the National Black Arts Festival or any number of these festivals, attract people from outside of the city and even the country who come specifically for that reason and want to take things back with them, want to have a cultural experience, so they want to eat the foods and the, you know, experience all of the things that are unique to that particular culture. So for us, it's how do you package all of this so that people think of it in terms of tourism. I know that when I look at the Essence Festival, they began promoting it months before it happened. Months. It's in the summer. That as well as the New Orleans Jazz Festival. I think they both occur. Well, the Essence Festival occurs over the 4th of July weekend. And then the New Orleans Jazz Festival, I think it occurs a little earlier than that, maybe in June. They start promoting these events nationally as early as this time of year so that people can prepare for it. So they got 6 months to prepare. I'm not sure that we're doing that very well in the city of Chicago. Of course, it happens with the Blues Festival, the Jazz Festival. Those are city-sponsored events, and they have the dollars. But there's no reason why we can't figure out how to secure the dollars that are needed to and package these events so that they become a part of a larger kind of look at what is African and African-American culture in the city of Chicago, and what does it offer, and what can you take back home that reminds you that you had that experience?
I can tell you just from my experience with the National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum that our experience with national and international tourists has been things where we sort of stepped outside of the box. We've had news coverage with national tourists. I'll give you a case in point. I want to say it was about 6 weeks ago. We had a tour. I want to say it was maybe 40 to 50 people on the tour bus. They were all Chinese. So they came, and this is not an isolated incident, but I just want to share this with you and with the listening audience. We had this tour bus of Chinese people who came, who wanted to, the interpreter indicated that they wanted to come because they wanted to have a look at the African-American experience authentically. And so they came and thoroughly enjoyed themselves. They asked tons of questions. They bought everything we had in the gift shop. And then they made a video. Our director, Mr. David Peterson, has developed a tradition where he does a quick video of large groups like that of international visitors. And so they made this video. We had no idea what they said. It was hilarious because they made this video and we didn't know what they were saying. So fast forward, I think maybe about 3-4 weeks ago, we had a student from the University of Chicago who happened to come to the museum, and she was Chinese. And so when I found out that she was Chinese, I played the video for her and I said, can you tell me what they said? She lit up like a Christmas tree. She just said, oh, they were saying how they enjoyed the visit and that it was a wonderful experience. And they were going to go home and share with their friends and family how they encountered this wonderful museum. Well, that just made me feel so good. And so the point I'm making is we have similar experiences like that because somehow they found out about the museum and a similar experience with a group who came from Europe. And we asked them, how did you find out about us? And so then they told us there was an article in their newspaper. Who knew that we had that kind of coverage? And so the point I'm making is, I think that we need to begin to look at how we collectively will package and market our own tourism offerings, because other people clearly don't, either they don't know how or they don't believe that people are interested. But I think this show, even the Live from the Pullman National Monument, it is a national and an international show. And I think that we can begin to utilize this vehicle as well.
I think it's really important. I think media, the power of media, whether it's social media, internet-based media, terrestrial media, wherever it is, it's a very important tool for getting the word out. Because if people don't know you're there, how do they come? But the word you use that really resonated with me is collectively. I think it has to be a collective effort where we sit down at a table and say, okay, this is what we have. How are we going to package it? How are we going to pay for it? How are we going to monetize it so that it's beneficial to the community at large? But I do think it is a collective effort. People have to be able, and I think based on my experience with the Guide to Black Chicago, more than anyone else, cultural institutions understand tourism. They get it. The museums, the galleries, the theaters, they get it. It will take a little bit of more effort to bring along others who may not get it, but you start with what you have, those who get it. And fortunately, what's happening, I think, is that we're getting a younger, more savvy business owners. Younger and more savvy business owners,
yes,
who've grown up in this world of marketing and who have a greater appreciation for it and know the value of it. It's certainly very doable. I think we're at a point where it's one of the best things that we could do. 1996, when we published our first guide, tourism was the fastest growing industry in the world.
And
not
still
in the
is.
City of Chicago, in the world. I don't think that's changed. If anything, it's gotten more so. So we're
it
a little behind.
It certainly does have.
I'm sorry?
It certainly has. And I think that is what I meant when I said my comment earlier about this is an excellent opportunity. It is the time that we seize the opportunities that are presented to us under the broader umbrella of tourism and stop thinking about tourism as something that is interested for those people, other
That's
people,
right.
Because we are the people. People are interested in knowing who we are, what we do, the authenticity of the African American experience is what people are really, really, really interested in. And unless
That's
we recognize those opportunities, we're going to miss the boat.
We will miss the boat because the truth of the matter is African American culture is American culture. Jazz, blues, gospel, born and bred in America. Classical music is European music. But blues, jazz, gospel, born and bred in America. If we just looked at the music alone, and we've got so much more than that, just the music alone is worth packaging and marketing in an international marketplace. People
it is
would come
business.
From every, we have some of the finest artists here in the city of Chicago, world-class artists. We have world-class visual artists. We have world-class performing artists. We really are a world-class city, and we need to recognize that our part in that is significant. We have to figure out how to, well, what we've been saying throughout this conversation, we need to figure out how to package it and market it and monetize it.
Well, what I thought was going to be a short interview turned out to be quite extensive. I couldn't be more pleased, but I think things don't happen in a vacuum, nor by accident. We were supposed to have this in-depth conversation, not just for ourselves, but for the listening audience. I think it was important. I think it was significant. And I don't think this should be the last time we have this discussion. You know, this show is all about tourism. and what I hoped to have happen as a result of this show is to begin to present information, data, to the listening audience so that help people understand what tourism really is. It is a business opportunity for all manner of people. It crosses age, ethnic, gender, and economic boundaries. And there's opportunities within that tourism arena under the broader umbrella of tourism. It's called cultural economic development. And there's something for everyone. We just have to figure out how to do it. And it won't happen just with lip service. Of course, it will take some work. But we've had some very interesting people to come on this show and have these kinds of conversations, including yourself. And I think we have enough information, enough talent, enough skill, and enough sincere interest to be able to form that collective, to be able to approach and start out the initiative to figure out how to package and market the offering, the tourism offerings for the African American experience in America.
Yes. Well, you're good. I'm with you.
Well, wonderful.
Yeah.
This has been an absolutely fabulous conversation. It has been, and I can't thank you enough, Ms. Kinsey, for coming on to share your expertise and experience with us today to help enlighten us about the possibilities that exist for African Americans in general under the tourism umbrella. And we hope to have you back again. Maybe we'll have you back with a couple of those other people who have been on the show and have an online panel to maybe we'll come up with some conclusions on how to proceed. I think this was absolutely wonderful. I can't thank you enough. Everybody, our guest, Barbara Kinsey from Kinsey and Kinsey Communications, a knowledgeable professional guest for today, and we hope that she will return at another time in the not too distant future to help us flesh out further this.
Thank you, Dr. Hughes. It's been a pleasure speaking with you and your guests today, and I look forward to talking again and really moving this thing to the next level.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Visit the BowmanBordermuseum.com, where you can purchase an annual membership at the level of your choice. And, of course, visit our website here to find out more about the show live from the Bowman National Monument at bbsradio.com/live from PNM to contact us. Live from Bowman National Monument was brought to you by Hughes Peterson Publishing in Chicago, Illinois, and My Rhythm Mind Spa in Homewood, Illinois. Hosted by Dr. Lynn Hughes and produced by Dr. McIntyre Evans.